This episode is brought to you by Castor and Pollux, maker of America's number one organic pet food, Organix. Look for their newest line, Pristine, the only complete line of pet food made with responsibly sourced ingredients. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org/pets.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network, broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Well, hello. Welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. We are coming to you live from Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It is Wednesday, October 11th, 2017. This is the 156th episode of the series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talents in the hospitality industry. Today, my guests are the awesome founders of a members-only social club, and I will introduce them fully in a moment. First, as I do in every show, I will start out with my PR tip, and then later we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to be a storyteller, and I mean a great storyteller. Don't just pitch to pitch. First, think about the context. Understand what you are promoting and why. What's the meaning behind it? What makes it special or unique? Once you've answered these questions, seek to share your story in a compelling way, keeping it fresh, relevant, and entertaining. Apparently, our brains are hardwired to remember stories more than recalling facts and data. So tell meaningful stories as they won't be forgotten. That's my tip today. Now, I'm really super excited to have two guests in the studio with me. They are Patrick Janelle and Amy Virginia Buchanan, the co-founders of Spring Street Social Society, a membership club that brings people together in unexpected spaces. Patrick, the executive director, is a man about town who, among many things, is a notable food Instagrammer. And Amy, the artistic director, is a singer-songwriter and avant-garde theater artist. Together, they host an ongoing series of one-night-only performances and dinner parties, and I think much more than that, and we're going to get into it. So welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sherry. So good to be here.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I've known about Spring Street Social Society for a long time, but I don't know. I'm not a member, so I'm going to find out.
Oh,
all
you
about
want all
it.
The secrets, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah, I want.
But like, does anyone really know?
I don't
Do we know?
Know? I don't know. It's a good question.
Yeah.
But I always start out with my guests with their background and how you got into the industry and what you're doing now. So, you, Patrick or Amy, who
all right.
wants to start?
Well, I mean, there's definitely like a part of the story that's us together, but then we also have our kind of like separate backgrounds.
Totally.
So maybe I'll just tell a little bit about where I came from.
Sure.
Specifically as it relates to the hospitality industry. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe it starts with Starbucks when I was in college. I also worked at a, I guess you could say, casual fine dining restaurant in my hometown of Fort Collins, Colorado. And I was a concierge at the Ritz-Carlton Club in Aspen, Colorado. And it's actually, as kind of short-lived as that was, maybe like a year and a half, and a world away from where I am today, I really think it was my time as a concierge at the Ritz-Carlton where I really learned to really just like take a guest's experience and make it my own and take ownership over how I could take care of a guest. That's a very, very small sliver of, I think, like part of the path that's led me to where I am today.
Totally. And if we're going to go that far back
all the way
to
back.
Our so very humble hospitality
yes.
industry beginning.
Yes, go back.
For me, it began when I was 16 years old at a Red Lobster in Stillwater, Oklahoma.
Your Lobster is my Starbucks.
I have Chili's and Bennigan's put on my resume.
Wait, is Bennigan's? We had Bennigan's Midwest, but I don't know.
I grew up in Miami, so it was
national.
Miami has everything.
Yeah, so I can join that club.
Okay. Well, and I didn't just work at one Starbucks, but I worked at two Starbucks. I worked at my love. 18 years old Starbucks in the Barnes & Noble in Norman, Oklahoma. And when I was a senior in undergrad, I worked at the Starbucks in Target in Lawrence, Kansas.
Neither one of them real Starbucks.
No. Oh yeah. No, absolutely not. I also learned cake decorating while I was at Target because you'd get bored and then just go hang with the bakers and they'd show you how to decorate cakes. But then fast forward to when we met and we were both now taking what we had learned from our humble industry beginnings into the big city. Because I feel like we were both then rooted in the industry in two very different ways, Patrick, in an editorial sense.
I worked at
Bon Appetit.
Yeah. Well, no, that is a big. I mean, it's especially for this show. Yeah, that says
sure.
Yeah,
it's a huge part of the industry.
Yeah, I mean, so Amy and I met about 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. We've both been in the city about 6 years now. Mm-hmm. My first job, my background is actually graphic design. So I was in the art department at Bon Appetit magazine. And that was really my entree into New York City, which was incredible. I mean, that was right after, Adam Rappaport took over the magazine as editor in chief and the, kind of a whole new artistic direction and conceptual direction. And so for me to like land in both design, editorial, food, hospitality, in that place right after I moved to New York City was awesome.
Yeah. And then my first year in New York, I had moved here. It's going to come up at some point. So I had just graduated from clown school and I had moved to New York to pursue this like avant-garde, theater performer existence. But my day jobs, plural, I managed a cafe. I managed the cafe in the back of the Housing Works bookstore in Soho. And then I also worked front and back of house catering for the Housing Works catering company called The Works, which worked primarily out of the bookstore, but also in a few venues around the city. So I was getting a very hands-on experience of what it meant to be in the hospitality world.
So how did you two meet?
Oh, get it, Patrick.
You've probably told this many times.
Let's see. Yeah, let's see how it's delivered today. So Amy and I were both regulars at a coffee shop in Soho, Gasoline Alley.
Mm-hmm. I like that place.
It was in my home neighborhood and it was in Amy's work neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So we were both regulars, but we actually never met.
Yeah.
I
would go before I opened the cafe at Housing Works because I always liked to receive something before I went and then gave things to people. I wanted to have like a hospitality moment, I guess.
And I would go in between gym and work at Bon Appetit. Mm-hmm. But Amy and I both became like dear friends with one of the baristas. So it was our favorite barista, Katie Tagg, who introduced us when she invited both of us to her birthday party in Lefferts Garden. Yeah. That was one Saturday or Sunday afternoon.
Totally. You walk into a backyard in Lefferts Garden. I'd say it was Dimmitt's Park.
Well, same.
same, but different. Patrick lives in Manhattan.
I don't know. Yeah, I thought I was doing a really good job by like naming the neighborhood. I was being so specific.
I was on board. I was just going to go with it.
They're the same to me.
I lived in the neighborhood. Therefore, I like, it was Dimmitt's Park. But I walked into the backyard and Katie came rushing up to me and she was like, Amy, I'm so happy you're here. I can't believe you've never met Patrick. And I was like, it's nice to see you. Happy birthday. And she was like, you have to come meet him. Come here. And she walked me straight to Patrick and was like, okay, Patrick works at Bon Appetit. You went to clown school. You guys are creatives. You'll be friends. So just like, talk to each other. And Patrick didn't miss a beat.
Well, at that moment in my life, I had recently moved into a new apartment on Spring Street in Soho, Nolita. And I had this backyard space and I was like up every morning gardening and like clearing it from this like kind of like desolate mid space between buildings into like my dream garden. So my waking hours were honestly filled with what am I going to do with this space? And there was this deck and a garden. And I thought one morning I had this epiphany that this is like the perfect place for a stage, for a performance. So that was what was on my mind. And apparently, I honestly don't. Do you actually remember
what I said? I remember it so specifically because you were like, oh, you perform? I have a backyard and I want to put on a play.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
And and I had just come from, you know, I had spent my first year doing like larger scale, like theatrical productions in like found spaces or weird stuff, but also doing a lot of kind of like one night only things or like, you know, like a show in the back of a truck on an abandoned street in Williamsburg or, you know, like a show in a basement or like cabaret things. Like I had been trying to figure out how to like perform in smaller ways so that you could do more because plays took up so much time. So I said, yeah, well, a play is really hard to put up, but we can make a cabaret show really fast. And you're like, cool.
Well, I probably pushed back a little bit, knowing me.
You didn't start pushing back until we started coming up with who was going to be in the thing. Oh. Because honestly, like, I remember it so well, because it started in the backyard. That same night, also Charlotte, mm-hmm. who is also another one of our favorite baristas, she and I recorded a voicemail on my phone that my mom still complains about to this day, even though it's no longer there. She's like, and you are drunk and you are talking into your phone. Anyways, but like, I remember it because we started like talking about how we wanted to do it. And then by the time we made it to Sycamore, mm-hmm. the bar flower bar, we had our phones out and we were making iPhone notes about performers that we wanted to have and who we wanted to like bring into it and how, like how much we wanted to charge and how
well,
we were
and going that, to... that was all your world. I mean, I had like ideas of like what performances could be.
Oh, you had so many ideas of what performances ought to be. That was when the pushback
started.
Many
ideas.
I'd be like, what about this or this? And you're like, well, okay. So, and it was great because you know that I feel like that first night we really set a precedent for like how we were going to work together, which was like, all right, we're going to push back on each other. We're going to, you know, like offer ideas, but not necessarily always agree. But then by the end of the night we had like a list of people for us to email and a decent strategy of how we were going to like get beer there and sell tickets. And
so 2 weeks later we put on our first cabaret show and we had 60 people in the backyard selling $2 PBR. It was maybe $3. I don't know.
It was $3 PBRs and $5 Brooklyn Lagers.
Okay. That's memory. I'm just back at the, you met and you became partners and you put on an event two weeks later.
Did, I mean, we okay. didn't realize at that time.
You didn't
when we
know
met
it was going to turn into what it has, but it did.
It did.
We honestly didn't know until the moment that the show ended and it felt relatively successful that we were like, oh my God, what did we just do?
And like, let's do it again. Like literally the next morning we got coffee at Gasoline mm-hmm. Alley mm-hmm. and we like debriefed and we were like, this thing was too long. This thing was great. We loved this. It was, I don't know, but like, it was great.
How could it be better was what we both like showed up to talk about.
Wow. So when did you formally start Spring Street Social Society?
Tell me what formally starting Spring Street Social
You have a
Society
name,
means.
You have a website, so the
name
I don't
was
know,
already,
there's a logo maybe. Well, logo, I don't know, you know?
I think the logo already
existed. We had the
existed.
Logo for the, we had the logo
I
for
asked,
the first
I,
one.
I studied graphic design. I asked one of my good friends, Mark Weaver, whose wife actually now collaborates with us on a lot of the styling of events that we do. A friend of mine from college had designed a logo. I think I already had a name because I had this idea.
So Patrick's really sneaky because he told me, let's call it Spring Street Social Society when we met. Little did I know that he had already decided before meeting me that he was going to call things that he did in his backyard Spring Street Social Society.
It sounded much better than Patrick's backyard thing.
Hey, they both have a good ring to it.
Well, thank you.
I was like, what a great idea. And you were like, cool. So there's a Twitter handle and we have a logo.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Like, you know, I think that, but you know, what's interesting about that is how I've always approached things. And I think how we now do together, but I think I brought a lot of that to you.
Oh yeah.
Was
absolutely.
Like, when we're going to do this, we're actually going to like so many things, especially about like, the design and the way that we sort of package something together has always been very important to me. That's like that's really a part of like the role that I play on Instagram and as a graphic designer, as a visual artist. And Amy has always been really about like the experience and the artistry and the creativity. And so
I won't claim the word creativity. I will claim like, you know, like I'm all about crafting an emotional narrative. I'm all about exactly what needs to happen in a moment to get people to the place where you want them to be, you know? but words like artistry and creativity apply to both of us, Patrick. Thank you very much. I appreciate that you're just like tossing that on me, but I'm going to share it with you if that's okay. But it is true. Like, one of the things that's so great about us when we met each other and how we've continued to work together, you know, is that when we both met, we both had very distinct training. You know, Patrick was trained as a graphic designer. I am trained as a performance artist, but Patrick has experience in the performance arts and I have experience with design. And so we had overlapping interests, but very distinct expertise. And so then we were able to both bring complementary skill sets to the table. And then as we've grown together for the past 5 years, it's been this really cool kind of like, oh, radio audience, I wish you could see my hands because I'm going to do a little like visual thing. But essentially, like, if you make a Venn diagram that has like a slight overlap, that's what we were when we met. And as we've worked together for the past 5 years, the overlap just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, so that we are able to kind of share a brain space, like pass responsibilities back and forth, have a really good understanding of, like, you know, even when it comes down to like what email should one of us send, you know, we know who needs to send which email.
Yeah, it's pretty intuitive. It's true. And, you know, so we started with this, literally this conversation that was the beginning of our relationship about a creative project. And now we are actually official now. We are. Spring Street Social Society is an LLC.
We're official. Very
official. We have
official
payroll. We do all of the sort of, you know, the
we have a lawyer.
Human resources
this
things
like
and yeah, management.
Now.
It's like real serious. Yeah. But there's definitely
been. I just
been
meant like the name.
So many shades of things in between. That
I think we're just really proud of the fact that we're official, so we just want to talk about it. We're like, we have a lawyer, we have a bookkeeper.
I think the reason that it's important too is that, like, we didn't set out to do this, but we found ourselves in this like ever changing this need to create and desire to create in so many actually different ways. And at the beginning, within the first year, it was the desire to change from just being performance to also food and performance, which we can talk more about if we want. But then at each point it became, oh, and also, you know, layering on this aspect, whether it's the human resources hiring people, mm-hmm. or whether it's, you know, more recently taking on creative projects for clients that are outside the scope of the social club. So it's really been sort of like shades of change that have come about gradually over the past 5 years, and really it's all just about us continuing to have that like collaboration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. And on that note, we're going to take a little break and then we're going to come back. I want to hear more about the food component. I want to hear about who are your members, how do they become members, things like that. We'll get into, and I have questions for you. We have a lot to cover.
Okay.
I know.
We're going to take a break.
Okay. We're going to take a break and come right back. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
This episode is brought to you by Castor and Pollux, maker of America's number one organic pet food, Organix. You put a lot of care and thought into what you eat. After all, you're a food radio listener. That thoughtfulness goes hand in paw with how you feed your pets. Purposeful pet food doesn't happen by accident. Castor and Pollux scours the earth to carefully select the best organic and responsibly sourced ingredients. New Pristine from Castor and Pollux is the only complete line of pet food made with ingredients that are responsibly raised, caught, or grown. Feed your dog or cat the new standard, like grass-fed beef, wild-caught fish, and vegetables grown without synthetic fertilizers or chemical pesticides. Pristine from Castor and Pollux. Purposeful pet food. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org/pets.
Coming back. So welcome back to Own the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guests today are Patrick Janelle and Amy Virginia Buchanan. They are the co-founders of Spring Street Social Society. It's a membership club. So it brings people together in unexpected spaces. I know that. I can read that. So who are your members? How do you become a member? And then maybe talk a little about some of the food-related dinners you've done. And then I saw just that you posted how this, you have a secret supper coming up too, something event that you're doing.
Secret Supper, the musical. Secret Supper,
the musical. Musical. Yeah. So which I can go to, I saw as yeah. not a member. Yes. So, mm-hmm. but.
Well, yeah. okay. So about members, I mean, the awesome thing is we have such a diverse, wonderful, quirky group of members. Mm-hmm. These are people who, initially when people in it came to my backyard for the first cabaret, it was our friends mm-hmm. or people that we were connected to on Facebook.
But even in that moment, it was a really interesting intersection of New Yorkers, because Patrick was coming from, you know, the design world and the media world, and I was coming from, you know, like downtown performance art music and like the volunteers at Housing Works, you know, which is, right. which in and of itself is a diverse group of people. And so suddenly you had these people from not overlapping industries hanging out together and mingling and doing stuff. And that's kind of been like a continued theme of how our membership has grown, is that, you know, when we first did membership, it was really our friends. But as we've now transitioned, it's been, you know, it's been 3 years of having a membership, it's become people that have sought us out. Like, our members are adventuresome, interesting and interested, curious, big-eyed, ready to consume something, whether it is, an artistic, any sort of art, mm-hmm. food, booze, design, performance. They are there to consume and excited to participate in the conversation about what they are consuming.
And I think there's definitely the person who was attracted to what we do because they were actually interested in connecting to other people into the city, like actually being social, finding others to be social with. But I wouldn't say that's everybody. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, though, I think what we're so proud to accomplish is that when we ultimately are creating those connections for people, whether that's why somebody was attracted to us or not, the experiences are a conduit through which yeah. we can really bring people together to connect individually and honestly connect with the city, which has yeah. always been so important to
say
us.
Say the thing about when
our favorite compliment.
Yeah. Really, okay.
I love this.
We honestly could, the thing that makes us so happy, like happier than anything else, is when somebody after an event, they come up to us at the end. And honestly, whether it's somebody that grew up in Manhattan is literally spent their life here, or somebody who's been here their whole adult life, or somebody who's been here a couple of years, and they say, and we've had this said multiple times, what just happened makes me remember why I love New York City.
Yeah, that's
and that that's why we do what we do.
Yeah,
because exactly. this is why we wanted to create the reason why we love New York City.
We also wanted to like make sure that we continuously love New York City. So that's I think that's part of why we're like crazy enough to keep on doing these events because we do, we love it so much here, and yeah. we love any city that we go into. We're fascinated by them, and what makes the city. We're both from small towns. What makes a city go? What makes it, what drives someone to be a part of something? What gets you out of your house?
The interesting thing too is this is, I mean, we're kind of, I think we're thinking about New York City, which is where we were founded. But we've heard the same thing in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. which is where a portion of our membership is as well. Totally. And we recently were in San Francisco and I think we heard the same thing.
Which is cool.
What's like a memorable or what maybe you have, all of them are memorable, but like what's, maybe give us an example of a dinner you planned or something and the location and how it went down.
Well, I think the first like mm-hmm. really kind of like extremely ambitious project that we did. I mean, everything is ambitious in its way that it's a step up from something we just did. But
we're talking Bryant Park.
I'm thinking Dead Letter Office.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
okay. Cool. Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Bryant Park was a dinner with performances.
I'm going to real quick, just because I feel like there's something that happened at Bryant Park that led to yeah. eventually like what we now do. So we did our first really big dinner in like a raw space that kind of like set the precedent for how crazy we get.
100 people, super raw commercial space so raw. Across by Bryant Park, across the street from Bryant mm-hmm. Park.
And we had worked with our friend Peter, who, oh my goodness, he was in an acapella group in college with Sarah Bareilles, and he's friends with all these whiffin' poops from Yale. And we were like, will you make an acapella performance for us? But we don't want it to just be any acapella performance. We want you guys to be the busboys. And then at the end of the night, surprise everybody by singing, you know? And so we got this guy, Ben Wexler, to create this mashup of Beatles songs that went from reverent to celebratory, you know, like they pulled from a bunch of different songs so that you recognize some, but others you were like, is this a Beatles song? And it really made everyone like stop in their tracks, like put their forks down and be like, what?
You know, it was an incredible moment.
Yeah. And so then that kind of like paved the way for, oh, we can commission performances. We can integrate the performances really in really interesting ways into dining experiences.
It is true that that's the first time that that we were really working with performers who already had their act, mm-hmm. and we were incorporating their act into something that we're doing, which we still do from time to time.
Totally.
But it was really
booking versus commissioning.
Yeah, commissioning and having an original piece that had never been seen before.
Sounds
and
awesome.
Also sort of like planting performers in different ways. So mm-hmm. it was a surprise. We also learned at that event never to actually make the singers bus tables. So now,
lesson learned.
Well, that was props to those guys because we had not intended to have them bus. We that was not the idea for them to bus. And halfway through the meal, because they were just supposed to be like lightly, like, you know, occasionally picking up a plate and then, you know, just like setting the tone of that.
Yeah.
They all like one of them, they sent like one to me. I believe it was Ben Piper, came to me and was like, we're going to start really helping you because they saw that we were struggling because we bit off more than we could chew,
right.
Which is, you know, a thing that we're getting better about not doing now. But now, okay, so that leads to...
So then Dead Letter Office was probably like a year and a half later. One of our friends, Zachary Grady, who I had just kind of like met through Friends in the City, and we started talking about theater work that he was doing at Ars Nova. I actually saw a show that he did that I really loved this concept. He basically would give the audience you would download tracks before you arrive, and then he would give you headphones and you listen to instructions via headphones and it guides you through a show, and you realize through the course of the show that you're other people are listening to other things but you're all choreographed together. The thing that he did for Ars Nova was like super fun and kitschy, and we discussed doing something that was a little bit more kind of like mysterious and sexy. So we commissioned him to create a dinner murder mystery. And for the first time, we really took this idea of the dinners that we were creating and the performance and brought them together in a kind of like full seamless way, which actually we've never really done that to that extent until what we're about to do next month. But, and this was in the Foley, the James Foley post office on 8th Avenue. You'll see it with like all the white columns and huge steps across from Penn Station. And the postmaster suite, we worked with Skylight, a local, property management company. And we really inhabited a space and made a site specific piece. We commissioned, we worked with friends to help us with costumes and the styling. And, mm-hmm. It was a really incredible undertaking and super successful actually.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely, one of our best received experiences we've ever made. And also I think one of the experiences that you and I both look back on and are extremely proud of, which is great.
Yeah.
And then that kind of leads to what we're about to be making, which you kind of like hinted at, because that was 3 years ago. And then 2 years ago we did our first like full scale theatrical performance. It was called Mermaiden, and it was a 3-act long play in which we put 25 tons of sand into a raw retail space in Penn Station so that we created this like indoor beach, and we had, you know, like cocktail, like tiki cocktails served throughout, and the stage would change from like so many different configurations from act to act to act so that
wow.
you felt like you were under the sea or like on a desert island or like on a pirate ship. And Patrick played a mackerel and I played a mermaid princess, and it was campy and ridiculous and weirdly Shakespearean. And that was, you know, that was 2 years ago. And so it's been,
and that was really, and that was performance,
strictly performance.
There were cocktails and there was a food moment that happened in the third act, but it was really like, you know, we have these verticals of performance, food, cocktails, and they kind of show up in different amounts, yeah, depending on
there. The, yeah, there's always different like percentages, and typically we were making sure that any form of contribution that an artist gives is very good. But you know, as we're going through like budgets or figuring out what our focus is going to be, like if it's a speakeasy, so we'll like really play up the booze element, have something like performancey. And then if we have food, it's like, you know, like a cute popcorn situation or something like that, you know? But we've never done an experience where the theater element and the food element are both of equal weight and value and also both play together.
And because Oh, sorry. And that's what this is coming up?
And that's Secret Supper, the musical. Okay. It is a, and this is great. We're all in the industry. And this is literally a show that is going to ultimately be about the industry and kind of like behind the scenes stuff, but also like why we do what we do and who are we doing it for? You know, it's going to be kind of like equal parts. I don't want to give away too much, but you know, you're going to get to like peek a little bit behind the curtain that we usually keep very tightly shut at our events. Because anyone that works in the industry knows that back of house is a messy place, that, that there's so much happening behind the scenes in order to make something really beautiful happen. We want to kind of like take a peek at that, see who the characters are that are making something happen. Talk about their dual personas. You know, anyone who's serving you in New York City has a side hustle, you know, like even if their main passion is actually, you know, being your waiter, then they also, you know, knit on the side and they might be an Instagram famous knitter and you don't even realize it, you know, like it's crazy how diverse we all are and how many artistic pursuits everyone has. And at the same time, we'll also be following the path of some of the guests at the party itself. So it's pretty meta.
It sounds amazing. This is open to the public.
Yeah, it'll be 8 nights. So, and about 70 people each night. Mm-hmm. So we don't actually have that many members. So we're opening up this dining performance theatrical experience to the public.
It sounds incredible. Yeah, I want to go.
We're excited. Yeah,
we're really jazzed.
So we are running behind on time, but I have two questions for my last, because I rescheduled shows, and so quickly we're going to ask these questions and get quick answers. How about that? But they're like loaded questions, okay. So I don't know how we're going to do it, but we'll get through. Okay, so episode 153, I had on Andrew Knowlton. Deputy editor at Bon Appetit, who I know you know, and a friend. So he wants to know, if you could throw a party at any location in the world, where would it be and what entertainer would you like to perform? He's familiar with the dinners you've done or like having performers between courses.
For sure. It's so hard to say. I mean, I've always wanted to have, this is actually a dream that I don't know exactly answers this, but I've always wanted to do a full experience and like weekend or week event that starts the minute somebody leaves their door and we get them all on a plane and they don't know where they're going and they end up in a place and, you know, maybe it's, you know, like a chateau or a chateau in France or some sort of like castle in Italy. And that's where the rest of the kind of like performance and the dinner unfolds over the course of a weekend or something like that.
Mm-hmm. I would go on that if you need someone to take you up on that offer.
And just real quick, dream venue, just because it's a thing that I think about every time that I'm on top of a mountain and you look across it and you're like, how does someone get to that space over there? Mountaintop. I want opera singers and I want people to be holding opera glasses so that they can see what's happening on the mountaintops around them.
Love that.
Can we make that happen?
Yep.
Okay.
Yes, you can, I'm sure. Okay, second question. Episode 155, I had on Alfredo Malatesta. He's the CEO, creative director of Flavor Gallery. So he wants to know, what's the one thing you have found that unites your members and community in each market between being that you're in New York and LA? And is if there's anything that you think is a common thread that you can't seem to find as a common thread between both coasts?
I mean, it is true that the coasts are very different. And the way they plan things and the way they commit to things and purchase tickets is very different.
Very different.
I wish we had more time to get into that.
Yeah, oh, we have a whole...
Yeah.
Honestly, I'm going to say the thing that I have found is a common thread between each of them, because we have tried this with all of our audiences on all the coasts. Everyone loves a sing-along.
And you'd be surprised. But
no matter how cool they seem, they love a sing-along.
I'm not surprised. I mean, I'm surprised you said that, but like, yeah, I think I could see that.
Well, you know, I think also, and, you know, we could get deep into this too. It is our goal and desire to create an atmosphere in which a sing-along is a totally appropriate and enjoyable thing. So we actually do a lot of work to make sure that the environment is, that the mood is ready for that.
Awesome. Okay, we're going to take one more break, or this is our second break. We're going to take two breaks more in the show and come back now, and we're going to do my speed round and industry news discussion. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Baer. My guests today are Patrick Janelle and Amy Virginia Buchanan, the co-founders of Spring Street Social Society. It's time for my speed round game. See if we could do this fast.
Okay.
What it is, I'm going to name a couple things and you just pick your preference, okay, such as chocolate or vanilla.
Are we each doing this separately or together? Right.
I think you do it together.
Okay.
We'll go through it. How about, okay, here we go. Eat in or eat out?
Eat out.
Eat out, yeah.
Wine, beer, cocktail, or mocktail?
Wine.
Wine.
Tasting menu or a la carte?
Tasting menu.
A la carte.
I like being fed.
I love it. Small plates or large plates?
Small plates.
Yeah.
Communal table or chef's counter?
Chef's counter.
Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
All-inclusive.
Instagram or Twitter?
Instagram.
I wish we... I mean, you're Patrick, a guy named Patrick. Instagram sensation. I wish I need a whole show just to talk about that. No, it's incredible. Oh,
we can always talk about that another time.
Yeah. No, I don't know how you do it. How about... How do you say it? Bozy the Clown? Am I saying that right?
Bozo.
I wrote down Bozy. I'm like...
Bozy's cute.
Bozo the Clown or Ronald McDonald?
Bozo.
That's Amy's question. I don't even know.
You were a clown. Studied to be a clown.
No, I did. Yeah. My clown's name is Pearl. She's lovely. But Bozo is an entertainer, but Ronald McDonald is like a charitable figure.
All right. You don't have reference to that?
Bozo the Clown.
Yeah, Bozo, not Bozy. How about cheese plate or dessert?
Cheese plate.
Manhattan, Brooklyn, or L.A.?
Manhattan. She lives in Brooklyn.
Yeah, I live in Brooklyn.
Cool. Okay. I didn't know. Okay. I love it.
Cool. Okay. So industry news. I just had to bring up how there's these fires in the Napa, Sonoma Valley region that are just...
Devastating.
There's this winery. Lots of wineries are just being destroyed, and it's horrible news. I don't really know what the solution is for it, but I did see Thomas Keller post on his Facebook page about French Laundry is they're closed right now. due to power outages, but he had the other places opening up, and he listed how the Sacramento Bee, their website, the Sac Bee, has ways you can help on their site if anyone wants to go help. But it's just, I just see this, it's just devastating.
Yeah,
so.
It is devastating. I don't know if, is this unprecedented in terms of like within the wine region? I don't know much about it.
I mean, fires in California is always a problem.
Right.
And I think that right now, just in general, we're in a time of devastation and hope for restoration between what's happening with fires there, fires in Oregon.
All of the hurricanes
All of the hurricanes, like Puerto Rico being completely demolished. And then last night I was just at a drag show and
of course you were.
Hey, it was Sasha Laura's hosting Nightgowns in Williamsburg, and they have a raffle that they do at intermission where they raise money for a cause, and they were raising money for Unidose, and it was in order to give support to Puerto Rico, and then Mexico after the earthquake, and it's incredible how many natural disasters are happening right now, and trying to decide where to put funds. But it was interesting that their whole thing was that, like, you know, the government will decide to put money wherever it puts money, but we get to choose. And so we have to like continue to contribute. So they raised, over the course of 30 minutes, they raised $2,000, you know?
Awesome.
So it's interesting to see how people are choosing to take care of their own and our own.
We're in a crazy time. And then I had an eater. It was great to see this article. Jose Andres is served over 350,000 meals in Puerto Rico was the title of this piece on Eater. And I don't know, Jose Andres is just, incredible. I don't know. He puts he doesn't just talk the talk. He makes things happen.
Totally.
And
and that's what I'm talking about. Like it is incredible the way that people are stepping up. And even just, you know, last night when I was talking with Melissa Rosenfeld, Rosenstein, sorry. Oh my god. Wait. Oh my goodness. Yeah, Rosenfeld, sorry.
Director of Vibe.
Melissa, I just had like a name brain fart moment. But she led a really interesting panel. You know, that's about trending, but we ended up talking about how, you know, like social justice and the way that we take care of people is trending, that it's super cool and vibing to step up and take care of our own and figure out how to fight for what's good. And what a great time to be living in where everyone keeps paying attention to that, even where people are wanting to, like, in capitalism, you know, people want to buy Toms, people want to buy Warby Parker glasses, like, they want to put their money, even when they're spending on themselves, back into something that's going to take care of somebody.
I have to say, like with Jose Andres, like that to me, I mean, it's all wonderful to support a business that also gives, you know, proceeds of their profit to a nonprofit. But to do something just so sort of pure, I mean, it seems so, so selfless and altruistic and
it's incredible.
And without really a return, you know.
No, it's incredible. His goal is to feed 100,000 people daily. I mean, they're just trying to do more meals. I mean, it's and he's out there doing it. It's really great. And then the last thing I picked out on CNN, those world's 50 best bars in 2017 was announced. So a bunch of ones from New York City. Nomad Bar was number 3 and the Dead Rabbit number 5. And then London did really well with number 1 American Bar taking that spot. Mm-hmm. So
at the Savoy.
Yeah. But you had told me.
I also co-founded a company called The Liquor Cabinet with my two brothers. It's primarily a cocktail recipe app. But really the goal of the company as we continue to build it is to create a editorial resource that's really about the stories behind liquor and cocktails and the way that things were produced and the way that they are now, the way that we consume them, and really just tell stories about liquor that I don't think really have been told before, especially in a world where we're talking a lot about, I mean, food, wine, beer, et cetera. It's not altruistic in the way that we were just talking about, but I've always wanted to have this.
No, kind of I think that what you're hitting on with the Liquor Cabinet app, which, you know, I'm extremely fond of, use constantly, big fan of.
Also an advisor in the company as well.
I am an advisor in the company, which is not necessarily why I'm speaking so highly of it. It is actually very good, but it's about education and storytelling, and those are things that bring us together as humans. The want to share stories is something, you know, when we're talking about what are the things that, you know, across audiences we see as common denominators, story sharing is so innately human.
Story sharing and sing-alongs.
Story sharing and sing-alongs, both. Yeah. And perfect. That's what the Liquor Cabinet's about. And that's what these bars are about, is mm-hmm. creating spaces that people want to go to, that people want to hang out at, that people want to bring people to and have a genuinely great experience, which is, at the end of the day, what hospitality is about.
I have to say, lists like that are a little crazy. Like, it's interesting to see, like, the American bar at Savoy in London next to, like, Attaboy on the Lower East Side. I mean, sure, like, the cocktails at both places are served are, like, obviously, like, top-notch. But it's so, like, how can you even, like, put these bars in the same category?
It's the same with restaurant lists and any list. But it's nice, I don't know, it's nice for them to get recognized and, I don't know, congratulations. It's like, I don't know, it's a happy, but it's, to compare...
Yeah, I'm gonna call you for a second though, Patrick. Right. I'm totally gonna call you out because I'm surprised that you're saying that, because half of the time we talk about how, like, we'll walk into a space and we're like, this space is so good at doing what it's doing.
Yeah.
Like, that's like the thing that you and I talk about. So you shouldn't be surprised, because if one bar that's like a little divier on the east side, on the Lower East Side, is like just the quintessential best version of exactly the bar that it's trying to be, of course it's on the same list as the bar at the Savoy.
Am I misunderstanding
you?
No, I think you're right. I think, okay. Without splitting hairs too much,
How we fight.
Well, we have to take one more break, so we could you guys can hash it out off the air. How about that?
Okay.
All right. One more break. We'll come back. I'm gonna do my solo dining experience. Stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. It's time for my solo dining experience. So this week, it's at Uncle Boone's Sister. Here's the rundown. The location, 203 Mott Street, Nolita, NYC. The concept, it's a tiny sibling to Uncle Boone's restaurant with counter service and creative Thai food to eat in or to take out. The owners and chefs, husband and wife team, Matt Dancer and Ann Redding. So why did I go? Because I love Uncle Boone's, and this place just opened. So my experience. So last night I popped in around 7:30. There were a couple tables inside and out that were filled, but it wasn't super busy. I noticed they changed it up from the decor when it was Mr. Donahue's. They moved the counter over to the side. And they had this digital chalkboard menu where you ordered to see the menu you ordered off of. I asked the woman taking the orders for some advice of what to get. She helped me, and I ordered. My food came out pretty quickly. I sat down, I ate, and I grammed. What did I get? I had the fried chicken lob with sticky rice and Thai iced tea. My take? Call it hot fried chicken. It was delicious, but it had a lot of heat, especially the cucumber salad that the chicken was served on. It was really delicious. I also, my iced tea with the condensed milk was a nice balancing with it, with the heat. You know, don't drink water when you have spicy things, but have something with some milk. It will calm down your spicy tongue. The ambiance, intimate, casual space with a counter on the side for ordering and a few small low tables inside and some sidewalk alfresco dining. Interesting tidbit. So the space previously was Mr. Donahue's, an old-school American counter from the same owners. It was an industry favorite, but not surprisingly, it was unsustainable with just 9 seats and low prices. So this concept should do a little better, especially since they're pushing the takeout part. Personal fun fact, I had dined once solo at Mr. Donahue's and at Uncle Boone's, and I still always think about their cow soy. It's one of my favorite dishes. Say it's a must get. So the cost at Uncle Boone's sister is, my cost was $17.75. That's not including tax and gratuity. Would I go back? Yes, for more Bangkok-inspired eats anytime. Website is uncleboonssister.com. There's that. You guys know of... Yeah. I'm sure you know Uncle Boone's.
Yeah, yeah, I've dined alone at Uncle Boone's. I have dined alone at Mr. Donahue's. I did not realize that it's now...
It's
Mr.
open.
Boone's sister?
Sister, yeah. They just converted it, I think, like a couple, maybe like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, great. It's such a cute... It's so tiny. It's cute. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the layout will work a little better. So. Okay.
I agree with everything at Uncle Boone's is spicy, or I feel like it is. So, like, they're not afraid of heat.
Yeah. No, they're not. I like heat, but I was, you know, at one point...
Intense.
Breaking out the tissue, to, you know.
Cute.
So, but it was good. Okay, so next week, my guest is Anna Horovitz. She is the owner of Good to Go Cafe and Anna in the Raw, which is a 100% organic line of pressed juice and raw vegan food based in Cleveland, Ohio. Anna, her clients are the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Cleveland Indians. She provides juice for these like major athletes. I'm so curious to see like what that's like. So, but you guys, what would you like to ask her?
I want to know what it's Anna.
Anna.
Yeah. I want to know what Anna's guilty pleasure cheat food is.
That's a good question.
I mean, because it's raw.
Her food. Yeah. I don't think, I could be wrong, I'll find out, but I don't think she lives off this diet of the food she does at her restaurants. Maybe she does, but anyways, it's a good question. We'll find out.
Okay.
I'm very curious her favorite late night Cleveland hotspot.
Mm, that's a good one.
That's good.
I don't know much about Cleveland, but
I don't either, but I'll find out. Two good questions.
Thanks.
So, that's the time. Yeah. I needed a 4-hour show with you guys. So much to cover. I mean, everything you're doing, these experiences, they sound fascinating. I'm so curious to see what you do next. And maybe we'll talk maybe a bit, just real quickly, Patrick, about this, your food Instagram account and how you have what, like 500,000?
Yeah, like 450,000
followers.
And it's interesting, as I started at Bon Appetit, and it really was, well, it's always been about like my life and the things that I'm doing. Food tended to be a much stronger part of my Instagram feed, I'd say, initially as I was growing. And now it's definitely more broad in terms of the types of things that I document. I love being able to post from a restaurant that I think is just fantastic. And hopefully people will then be excited to go there. I feel very thankful to kind of have that that notoriety and also that visibility to really kind of, you know, point my finger in the direction of things that I'm really excited about. So whether that's a restaurant or whether it's, you know, a neighborhood, a place that I'm visiting, things that I'm wearing, things that I'm drinking, all of those things are things I talk about.
Did you think your Instagram would turn into such a big following and a brand?
No, definitely not. I mean, I joined Instagram like many of us do, just to connect with our friends and share photos and view other people's intimate moments. And I was thankful that what initially was just a desire to show people my creative viewpoint as a visual designer and kind of a photographer on the iPhone, that people were responding well to that. And then eventually that did turn into a larger brand and a revenue stream and a business.
Can I give past you just... Sorry. Hi, my name is Amy, the dutiful wife. I've been here since the beginning, but I want to give past you a little more credit than that. Because one of the things we talked about when you were first thinking about leaving Bon Appetit to pursue, you know, full-time life as a guy named Patrick, you were like, this is one of the reasons I moved to New York, because I was sitting in Germany watching my friends, like watching, like, you know, like Mark Weaver was like really active on like Instagram and I think Twitter,
like
at the
Flickr
time.
And Flickr, Twitter, yeah.
And you're like, I was seeing what my friends were doing and what they were making. And I'm sorry, forgive me for like speaking for you, but you weren't doing it for yourself. So I'm here. But like, you know, you were like, I was seeing what they were doing and I wanted to be a part of it. I knew that I could like have something to contribute to that. And so, you know, you maybe didn't necessarily move here with the intention to be what you are now, to have created this space on Instagram, but you did move here knowing that there is something going on and that you wanted to be a part of it in a larger way than just watching.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. And it's totally true. But also,
what, babe?
Like, that's so much the heart of what I think both of us do with Spring Street Social Society. Oh. We didn't know that what world we were creating for ourselves, but mm-hmm. New York has, for us, has always been this dream, this sort of like ideal version of a place that we saw from afar. And we both moved here and wanted to make that thing for ourselves. And, yeah. and we have, you know,
yeah, we have
in its own way yeah. and in a way that we never could that, have predicted.
Sharon's like, cut it off.
No, that I'm thinking that is a beautiful, perfect way to end the show. No, seriously. I congratulations on all of your success and everything cool. you've done. And I'm really glad to now know you guys. I knew a guy named Patrick. I followed you on Instagram, but I didn't know you. And to meet you today, Amy, it's been wonderful. So
awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Sherry.
Thank you.
My guests today have been Patrick Janelle, Executive Director, and Amy Virginia Buchanan, Artistic Director. And they are the co-founders of Spring Street Social Society. This is a membership club that brings together people in unexpected spaces. And you can find out more on their website, sssociety.com. And I wrote down all your Insta and Twitter handles here. Correct me if I get anything wrong, but I have Instagram at Spring Street Social Society, a guy named Patrick, and Amy Virginia. And then you also have your websites, a guy named Patrick and amyvirginia.com. And then on Twitter, you're Patrick Janelle and Amy Virginia.
Oh, no, don't say it. So embarrassing.
And window of my eyes.
It's a Simon and Garfunkel lyric.
Find your spring.
That's cute.
All right. People just Google search. You'll find these people. How about that? Now you can find me at Sherry Bayer at Bayer PR at All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry. My websites are BayerPublicRelations.com and SherryBayer.com. All of our shows are archived at heritageradionetwork.org, on iTunes, and on Stitcher. Thanks again to Patrick and Amy, and thanks always to my engineer, Vitor. I'm Sherry Bayer. I'll be back next Wednesday at 4 with another live show. I hope you'll tune in then, and thank you for being part of All in the Industry. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization, driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.